This is Jim Wilson, recorded by Chris Alden Lee on the 13th of April 2011. Jim Wilson, Part 2.
You came home after your 62 season at Stonington.
Yes.
Did you imagine that was it?
No, I don't think so. I thought I'd like to go to Deception.
So what happened? Did you have to reapply?
Well, I reapplied. And
externally? Or did you just ask somebody?
I probably asked somebody. Mm. And I thought, well, Deception seems a good, interesting place. And I went to Deception. And I, as a diesel mechanic. That was that, really. But there you are, you see. I'm just telling... I didn't think I'd... I suppose in many ways I didn't think any of it was terribly special. I loved the journey. I loved the travel out. And I like meeting the different people. And I suppose... I mean, I don't know if I thought this. It was better than the shipyards. Mm. You know. But a lot of fellows that came, they just did they did two winters and that was it. But there were people like Ben and myself and Jim Shercliffe that were permanent FIDs.
Deception, of course, was the air base at that time, wasn't it?
It had just kicked off.
The air unit was based at Deception.
That's right.
So tell me about the planes you saw coming in and out.
Well, I think they kicked off was Otters, I think, and a Beaver too. Mm-hmm. And I put in two Lister, no, they weren't Listers, two Enfield diesels into the hangar mainly just to provide electricity for heating, because there was no fires and things in it, and they didn't have an engine, didn't have a generator in it, so they had to keep, because they worked in the hangars all winter, the fitters, servicing the aircraft. I used to put them in with under direction, and I used to pull them out when they went away to fly. They were tied to a Fergie 35, but they just fitted the doors. And I used to think, well, you haven't got to touch an aeroplane's wing very much. And it's had it, hasn't it? And if you're pushing it in backwards and it catches, you think, oh, ooh. And especially at the beginning of the flying season when you're pulling them out. And they haven't really flown yet, but it never happened.
So what were you keeping warm? You were keeping the men warm, or the
planes?
The
men and the spares. Because I had, well, I mean, tens of thousand pounds of worth of spares. We had nowhere to put them, not in the hut. Mm-hmm. And so that was what that's what that was put there. And lights, of course. Because they worked there, well, that's what they did all, you know. Because the pilots, they didn't do anything in the winter.
So all winter was spent servicing the planes for the next season.
Yes, I mean, I think it must have been terribly boring for some of the pilots, because if they weren't interested in anything else, that was what they were there for, because. Prior to that, they didn't winter. They went away back, and you know, but when they were wintering there, I think some of the pilots used to get a bit bored with it. I may be wrong, but I think they were a bit cheesed off with it in the end.
Did they? The planes, were they using wheels or skis or floats or what?
Wheels and skis.
No floats. They weren't.
The Beaver had floats on it. That's a de Havilland Beaver, which is the smallest. There's the Otter. It's that's the Beaver is the smallest aircraft, and then you came up to Otters, but they didn't have that very long because they broke a wing on that. It got bumped against, I think it was on the Kisterdan, and it bumped the Bisco, and that was the end of that.
Well, the plane was damaged whilst it was still at sea.
Yes, that's right. I think that was it. I think that was at Argentine Islands. And we give it to Antonius Quintus to destroy. He came from Tyrone. Tony Quinn. Give him a big fire axe and said, get shot of that.
He trashed the plane, did he?
No, he got just... I think the ship's grunched the plane, but he just sank it.
It sank the plane?
Yes. He had a big axe, and he was a big, strong lad, and just went and chopped bits off it.
What was the reason for sinking the plane rather than rescuing it?
I don't know. Okay. Just said, get shot of it. No sea. It's not there.
Okay. There were other bases from other nations on Deception at that time, I'd imagine. Did you have much contact with the South Americans?
Yes. It was an Argentine base, was the nearest to us. And at the right opposite was the... The Chilean base was nearest to us. And the Argentine base, we used to go... Well, we used to go, not a lot, but occasionally. I always used to go to the Chilean base for their independence, Dias Independencia, in September. And then I think the RG Independence Day. In fact, like that was probably about June or July or something like that. Artigas? No, Artigas is Uruguay. General Belgrano. No, that was... Well, it was...
That was Argentina.
That was Argentina, but that was Argentina. But the cruiser that was named after Belgrano, wasn't it?
There was a base called the Belgrano.
Was there a base called it? Yeah, well, I think
it was used more than once. That
yes, one. That was it. But and the Argentines were... Well, I think the Chileans were Air Force, and I think the Argentinians were... I'll go and say Navy, mm-hmm. but there could have been Army. But they were very... all right. There was never any problems with them at all.
Deception was a volcano, of course.
That's right.
Were you aware of that?
Oh, yes.
Did you feel anything, any vibrations?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was there when it blew up.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. That's how I got the job with the Commonwealth Institute. Years later, I met Valerie, I hadn't seen for many years, and she had her children up at the hotel. And I was looking along the bottom, Christ, there's Val. Anyway.
What's your memory of the eruption that you witnessed?
Frightening.
Did it come suddenly, or was there...
Oh, no, it came, but it was still there when we went. I mean, it was still the sea, there was fumes, and it was... It was hot, and it was. I think it was still semi-active. It never really. You know, it gave one little rumble, and then they got geologists. No, well, volcanologists came and had a look at it from Cambridge it doesn't matter where it was, Cambridge or Oxford, and they said, oh no, it's had its little pop. It won't do that for another 50 years, but it did. It did it next year and blew a big hole. And the base was destroyed.
You were there the year before that?
That we were there the year before.
Yeah, so you did witness one eruption.
Yes.
Tell me about that, Jim. Paint me a little picture of what happened.
Well, it just starts to rumble and grumble, and the hut was shaking, and, well, you don't know what's going to happen, but it just... Then it quietly stopped, and which I think everybody was very, very pleased. It had blown, I think, in the 1930s, and the ships lost all their paint because it was the whaling factory was going. I just heard this, but I think the sea boiled, and because we were living in the whaling hut, which. Had been built for the whalers, and that was destroyed. Well, it was going to be changed anyway. And nothing ever happened. We started building a new hut, and then the second eruption came and it destroyed the building. It destroyed this. The thing was, deception was abandoned, and people have been back. Well, Valerie has, because she sent me pictures of it and sent me bits and pieces. I've never been back. I don't think I've any great wish to go. Seems strange. I've always been going to go back to Australia. I was very fond of Australia, but I was in the outback. I was in the, you know, and it suits me. I mean, I wouldn't want to go to Australia and live in Sydney. Mm. I was in South Australia most of the time, and I liked Antarctica. I liked the Falklands.
But you liked it so much that when you left Deception at the end of your fourth season, that wasn't the end of that either, was it? Because you kept going back.
That's right.
So how did that come about? Why did you keep going back and doing summer periods down there?
I found it was very that I enjoyed. It was a.
Did they ask you, or did you ask them?
I can't remember that. Who I asked? I was probably asked.
You think they invited you to go back?
Yes, yeah. and it was a good little earner, mm-hmm. And you were like you were home. You were down in the Antarctic in the southern summer, and you came back to the northern summer.
What sort of work were you doing on these summer expeditions, Jim?
The very first job I think I did was build. No, maybe I can't remember which way it was. I think I did. I certainly don't know which way it was, but one of those. That's at Cygne, and that's one of the jetties I did.
These are photographs, yeah.
Yes, and I know I did the non-magnetic hut at Argentine Islands. I built that. That was very interesting because even the cement was non-magnetic and non-magnetic bricks. I built that, and it's still there, as far as I know. And then I did a jetty out with a gang. We did a jetty. I think it took us 2 years to finish this one. And then they wanted a jetty at Adelaide, and we did a jetty there, and I think that took nearly two summers. Mm-hmm. And then I did a jetty, and I think the jetty and the magnetometer hut, that was me when I met Alan Weirden. That was at Argentine Islands.
Was a jetty at Deception, is that right?
I think, yes, we did a jetty at Deception, okay. Too.
Talking about the magnetometer hut, how do you actually avoid any magnetism in the building itself? Is there a technique?
Well, as far as I know, I just followed all my instructions.
Oh, right, OK.
I built it as I was told to build it, and everything was in the plinth or the thing you put it. I had to be dead level, and I was a bit concerned about that because I hadn't done much brickwork and things. Mm. But that was when I think I first met Alan Smith. I think he was at Argentine Islands.
How did you take to the jetty work? Because you became quite expert at building jetties.
I quite enjoyed it. Yes, I did. I think I found out that, one of the bases, I don't know which one, had the same tides as Singapore. Because I had tide tables, you know.
You had to work out how
well, you couldn't, yes.
High to build it.
Yes, but that'll not be correct, but it was something very like that. The Deception in Hong Kong had the same tides, but it probably wasn't that, but it was something like that. Because I had a tide table book. And again, you had to, you worked odd hours at low tide to get it done, because you can't do it at high tide. And it was the FID's powers that be that wanted the jetties built. And by then I knew Sloman, and I knew Derek, was it?
Gibbs.
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 And And I think they would. They asked me. I don't think I asked them because I was sort of, well, let's be honest, I think, I suppose, I was out of my depth. But I'd done work on engines and that, but I'd never done that sort of work. But
well, what was the tactics you used for building a jetty then? Was it high technology or was it very basic technology?
It was pretty basic, but it was built with strength. No, I mean not the men who did it. I suppose they were fairly fit, but it was a lot of heavy concrete and big, yes, like built for strength.
But with the tide coming in twice a day, how did you harden the concrete? What was the tactic for that? But
we had, what did they call it?
A fondue, was it?
I was going to say cement fondue.
Yeah,
we used to use. That's right, cement fondue. Hundreds of tins of it. It's French, isn't it?
The word is French, yeah.
Yeah, it was cement fondue.
So the jetties were only usable at high tide by boats, I mean, later, when you finished.
Yeah, when we were finished, yes, more or less, or semi-high tide. Mm. But because we didn't, I mean, I wanted to, I mean, I never got it because I've forgotten this, but I remember asking Derek, we'll need a cofferdam so we can work and build it and keep the sea out. But no.
Money.
Mm. Yeah. Like De Gaulle, no. As long as he was there, there'd never be in the bloody, never be in the common market. And I thought, well, long as all the gold's there, we'll be all right. Because all he used to say, well, Britain, no.
you did one more season, one more summer season, down at Argentine Island, I believe.
That's right, that was
when you were building the Sondstore jetty.
That's right, I remember that, yeah.
But for this, the difference this time was that before you went, you actually had to go to the Cambridge Conference.
The only one I was ever at, I think.
What did you make of all that, then? Because you knew it all, didn't you?
Yes, I don't. Well, I didn't think I knew it all by any means. But
I didn't mean that rudely. But you had plenty of experience.
Yes, I thought it was rather interesting. Because the young gentlemen weren't back, but they were coming back, and we were in some of their rooms and their box, and it was a. Well, to me, I mean, being going to Windy Half School. The Dons were back and sat at the high table, and they did themselves very well. Their port was very good. We used to pass the port and things like that. and I enjoyed my time. I used to go out at night with, I think, John, and there was another lad from Glasgow. But being Glaswegians, they complained about the size of the drams they were getting in Cambridge. I was only there once, and it was only 3 days, but it was very interesting.
Well, did you learn much? Because the whole point was they're supposed to be an introduction to the Antarctic, weren't they?
Yes.
And they still are.
Yes.
They're a bit longer than three.
Do they still do them?
They do. They're more than 3 days now. But
I think it was about 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't any more than 3 days.
Do you remember learning stuff at that
conference? I didn't learn anything.
You didn't?
Not to my knowledge. That sounds big-headed.
No, that's fine.
I don't think I remember learning anything, because what they were talking about, I'd heard it all before.
One of the things they're very big on these days, hot on these days, is health and safety.
Yes, and I don't think that came very high on the list. But it didn't come very high on Wimpy's list then either, because I worked with them during my time too. Mm. And no, I don't think Wimpy's or McAlpine's in the early 50s were much interested in health and safety. Just they've got a great lot of big paddies there, and they'll do it for you. Mm. You know.
But did you have to, if you weren't taught it, did you have to actually employ health and safety thinking when building these jetties? What were you doing to protect yourselves?
Very little.
Really? Okay.
I don't think I was. Well, that doesn't look very protective, is it?
These are the photographs you're working at Signy on the...
Yes, jetty. And I don't know. I mean, it's... I don't know.
All right, OK. What else about that year at Base F at Argentine, which is where you met Al Weirden, of course?
That's right. I can't remember. Well, I do remember him vaguely, but not particularly, because I knew it was the end. I think Inari had already come into the frame, and I think I might even have applied for Inari by then.
Inari.
Australian,
right.
National Antarctic Research Expedition.
So what made you want to go there then, or with them?
Oh, I think I've always had a certain longing for Australia. Not Canada or America, but Australia is always... I used to enjoy, like, the black fella, and I what they used to call it, the land of the never-never. And I think I've always, like... I mean, I've been to New Zealand, but I always, you know, the bloody New Zealanders are more pommy than the bloody pommies.
When you went to the Australian Antarctic Service, did you spot any big differences in the way they went about things compared to Bass, as it was then?
Yes.
What were the differences?
Well, they weren't as good as selecting the people as the old boys were at Bass. Mm-hmm. In my day, I think a lot of them had sent chaps all over the world. And whereas the Australians had, you had to fill in, you were interviewed by psychologists and filled in psychological papers and... They went into it in a big way, and they made mistakes.
Yeah,
the money was too big. They paid the biggest money of anybody in the.
It was tempting the wrong sort of people, was it?
I think a lot of them, because by then I was into my 40s, and a lot of the chaps who were coming, they saw the brand new car, but they hadn't done the time to get it, you know. And when they got to Macquarie or Mawson, there wasn't many Australians worked for the Australian Antarctic Research Expedition.
Why is that?
Because it doesn't appeal to the Australians. I mean, the Australians like Queensland and the Gold Coast, but not the bloody snow and ice.
They didn't like snow and ice.
Don't like bloody snow and ice. I mean, at Macquarie, how many... There was... I think there was only two Aussies.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Did them...
No, it doesn't... Snow and ice doesn't appeal to Australians. No.
Were they more...
What appeals to them is watching the bikinis on the beach, you know.
Don't get many of those in the Antarctic, do
no,
you?
No, but that's watch the bikinis go by and out on your surfing board. That's more like it.
Yeah.
And I think I could have been a beach boy. I could manage that.
FIDS became Bass, and they became more and more sophisticated in the way they went about things. Were the Australians as sophisticated as Bass at that time, or was it a step back again?
I think they were more sophisticated.
Really? In what way?
And if you call what FIDS are now sophisticated...
Well, sort of, yeah.
Really. Yeah, but they were more modern. Because FIDS, when I first went, were really old-fashioned.
Mm.
And that suited me. I didn't like it when they got changed and got modern. Captain Johnson was... Well... He'd been at the Battle of River Plate, so that's good enough for me, on the Fitzroy. Just helped us sink the Graf Spee, or they scuttled it in the end, but I know. But I think the Australians were more... In fact, they have... Well, it's a long time since that. They had a slight American in them, you know. It was... I never liked... The one part of it, I got used to it. I mean, but they would call you Jim, and they didn't know you.
Were the bases better quality? The Australian bases?
Yes.
And what was the difference there?
It was just better quality, just better gear, better carpets, better beds, better grub.
There was more money about, wasn't
there? There's more money about. Mm. And, I mean, your wage was, I don't know what I was getting, but it was a big, compared with 400, I mean, I was getting 1,000s a year, whereas I was getting 400. But you were into 2,000 or 3,000 or more dollars. They paid more than the Yanks. I think.
And did you apply to go with the Australian Antarctic Service, or were you kind of roped in? How did that happen?
I applied to go, and I wanted to go. And I knew them. And by then, which was late in life for me, I'd realised that money probably means something, because I would have went for nothing with FIDS. Mm. I mean, but I was getting into my 40s, and I thought, no, I could do with $5,000, you know. but it was late. I was late. That's one of Ben's sayings. He used to say that. Ben Hodges. You know Ben?
I do.
He used to call me Jay. Jay, we were late developers. but we're caught up. we were late developers, but we caught up.
Yeah. When your last season with FIDS,
I'm going to have to stop soon.
Yeah, well, it's only 3:15.
It's all right. No, I didn't mean my voice.
All right, I'll be quick then.
All right.
Your last season with the FIDS, Argentine, you came across your first tourist boat, didn't you?
That's correct, yes. Well,
what do you make of all that then?
Well, I didn't fancy it. I remember, well, I didn't. I didn't bother it. But I did meet Peter Scott.
Oh, the naturalist?
Yes. It came in. I can't remember what they called it, but it doesn't matter.
The boat? Was it the Lindblad?
I was going to say I was a Lindblad explorer. It certainly came to Macquarie.
Hmm.
But I remember everybody went on board, I used to call them the grey... It doesn't matter. All the ladies had blue rinse girls, and for a meal and a fiddle. And I didn't. And I thought, a bit of peace.
You didn't want to know.
I didn't want to know.
They all were this. They were nicknamed the Red Penguins. Is that right?
I think so.
When they came ashore.
But I was sitting in the. There was nobody on the base but me. And I thought, this is all right. And I was sitting in the bar. I don't know if I had a drink, but I was sitting in the bar, but it didn't matter if I had, it would just be a can of beer, because I never drank an awful lot, even yet. But I heard the door go, and I heard somebody walking up the curb, and this chap came in, and it was Peter Scott, and he was the same as me. He'd got off the ship for a bit of peace, and we sat and talked, and a year later, or 2 years later, the Lindblad Explorer came to Macquarie and the same thing, and all the lads wanted to be on board, and I thought, I'll have a bit of peace on me. I'll be on my own. I've just got the Jennies, and I've got a book, and I've got a can of Foster's, and that'll do me. And so everybody had gone. It was nice and quiet, and I was playing music, and again I heard a door go, and somebody walking down. Doors opened to the pub, and it's Peter Scott again, and he said, "Good God." He says, it's the other side of the world. And so we talked quite a bit. And I think we were very, very much alike in many ways. He was doing it for the same reason as I was doing it, because he would just wander about the beach, and when they brought all these young men back, he'd get on the boat and go back on board. It was a night away from all the... Well, I suppose I was getting older, and I wasn't into that at all.
Did you know some of the chaps with his father's expedition, Captain Scott?
I knew one, and I can't remember his name, but occasionally we used to go into Funchal in Madeira.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him because he used to come, because he knew the ship being to the Antrim, and he came down to see if, I think he was just an old lad, he came down to see if he knew anybody. He might have just been, not say just, because they, I'm going to say, he maybe was a member of the Discovery crew, but he was obviously living, had retired into Madeira, and I saw him once or twice, but I didn't know him.
Did he talk to Peter about his father?
I think I probably did, yes. Well, maybe not.
He never knew his own dad, did he?
No, Peter Scott. Maybe I didn't, because it wasn't. It wouldn't be...
Polite.
It wouldn't be good manners.
Yeah.
Unless he brought it up. I can't... We used to talk, because it was all right. I was interested, because we had one of his chaps came with us once or twice, from Slimbridge.
Correct, yeah.
I was interested in Slimbridge. I never went. I was always going to go, but we had one a lad that worked there. He was on the Bisco once or twice for watching birds. But he was a quiet man. I found, and I didn't. He didn't spoil me little night that I was on my own.
He respected you.
Yes, and I think I respected him. Mm. We respected each other. And he didn't... He stopped a bit. He didn't walk away. And when I saw him again, I was rather pleased. I thought, oh, it's yourself. And he probably said, oh, yeah, yes, yes. Doing the same thing.
conscious of your throat, Jim, but I've got one or two quick questions to ask you for me. If you want to stop, please say. You had some scary moments, I think, particularly when you were out boating. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about one or two of those?
Well, I suppose nearly sinking, that's scary enough, isn't it?
Where was that?
That was Adelaide. That was in Marguerite Bay. Going ashore to Adelaide with an overweight... scow, and eventually, well, we would have gone, but myself and a chap called, I knew him very well, Noel Downham, Buana, as we used to call him, because he was in the Kenya police during the Mau Mau business in Kenya. He's been here. He used to come to see me once or twice.
I met him last autumn.
Did you? Mm. Were you in Canada?
No, he was at Windermere.
Oh, he was at Windermere. Oh, I haven't seen Buana for quite a while, because he worked out on that estate out there. Our land goes out there. He was with Whitbread had it then. He hasn't got it now, the brewer.
So what happened to this scow?
We sank it. Went with two axes and chopped it. Otherwise, it would have pulled the boat down.
So, sorry, I missed some of the story. What was happening?
It was overweighted, and it was low down, and it was just taking water in. And we're taking ashore hundreds of bags of sand. And, of course, they're getting heavy. And it was going to sink. And if it sank, we would sink.
So it was tied to the ship, was it?
Oh, well, it's tied to the... Ah, well... I did a lot of work with boats, and I think I was once known as the seagoing fid, and I worked more with the crew of the ship than I ever did with fids, and I was very friendly with sailors and seamen, and especially the Falkland Islanders, and it was Noel, and I said we're gonna have to bloody cut it. Because I was old by then, and a lot of the young lads didn't know what to do, and they didn't want to, and the young officer didn't want to, because what would the captain say? I said, well, the captain, what will the captain say if you come up in a bloody box? You know, and we had fire axes, little fire axes.
So you cut the rope.
Cut the ropes that tied the scow to the motorboat.
Right,
and it went. Because it had about 20 ton in it.
So that was touch and go, was it, that one?
I think it was touch and go.
Yeah.
And we had one or two like that. Because they did things that, well, it was bad seamanship, a lot of it. They were trying to beat the tide and get the ship unloaded. And they put two, and then they couldn't get alongside the jetty. And nah, I think by then, I suppose, when I, it's only this very minute I'm talking, I suppose by then I was old and older and more experienced. But if I'd been a young, his first times, and I remember being, yes, the same, well, he ended up being Turnbull, captain of the end of it, but what will the old man say? Man, about the bloody, and the ship's bearing down on us. They hadn't seen us. You know?
Hmm.
But you see, when the young officers and that, they're worried what the captain will say. But the captain can't bloody see you.
So you were on the scow that was sinking?
I was on the scow that was
sinking. And you had to swim for it?
No, we didn't. We sank it.
And then, but then what happened to you?
We jumped onto the motorboat.
Right.
And the motorboat was all right.
Yeah, okay.
And you can always get more sand.
Yeah.
And eventually you can get... I think that year, we got the sand out and the skull lifted. But once everybody's gurgling in the cold water, it's not funny anymore. and that happened once or twice. And I think they used to send... There was a little lad, he was from Sunderland, little Joe. He was a motorboat driver. But he was all right. But he was sent by the mate. And he was told, go ashore with that. And little Joe didn't want to. But he doesn't... I mean, he was about, we'll say, 19. But if he'd been 50, you would have said, you bloody take it then, if it's that good.
All right. Can I ask you about the Black Adders?
The Black Adders?
Does that mean anything to you?
No. I know the only Black Adder that I know is the Black Adder.
Rowan Atkinson?
No.
No.
A river in the Borders.
Oh, right, okay. And what's a Birmingham screwdriver?
Oh, a Birmingham screwdriver. That's a hammer, isn't it? I think it's a...
Well, you're a dab hand with a Birmingham screwdriver.
That's yes. A Black Adder? No, I don't know.
Okay, that's fine.
But a Black Adder would be... It's just a hammer.
A Birmingham screwdriver.
Birmingham screwdriver. But there is a... There's the White Adder and the Black Adder, and it's near Lauder,
right,
in the Borders.
And what was this about a passion for boiled eggs?
Well,
did you have a passion for boiled eggs? Or was that somebody else?
I don't think I had... Well, I would probably like boiled eggs, but I don't think I had a... I was very fond of penguin eggs. Mainly because we didn't have many. I get eggs from a friend up there who has hens. And I don't eat... I would eat a lot more, but I don't. But
Was it... You had two chaps you worked with quite a lot. One was Alan Green... And one was Joe Sutherland. Was it Joe Sutherland?
Joe Sutherland, yes. I'd forgotten about Joe. And Alan Green.
Was Joe an egg fan?
He might have been, Joe. Oh, right. And Alan, I went to see him. He was from Udney, Aberdeenshire. His father had... I went to see Alan once or twice, but he had... he lived at the place called... It was beautiful. The Miller Minnis. And it was an old water mill.
Mm-hmm.
And his father was, well, much older than I am now, but he kept it. It still worked. And I asked him, or maybe Alan asked him, I'll ask my dad if he'll set it away for you. And he kept it, and he set it away, and the wheel worked. And the big grind, it had for corn, you know. It was power, a beautiful old water mill. And it was called the Mill of Minnis. It's North Aberdeenshire, on the way to... was where Prof Dunnett came from. But I would think Alan Green's probably dead.
Hmm.
I'm only guessing.
I don't know, no.
Joe could be, too.
And there was this, again, according to my notes I've been given by Al Weirden, when the Admiralty Bay boys went on a ship, did you have your own kind of language?
Oh, yes, yes.
So what was all that about?
Well, I think you just had words. I found it very interesting. You could see how languages developed within a primitive or an isolated part of the world, that they had words that meant nothing to anybody else.
Mm.
When it becomes like a language, doesn't it? It's like a dialect.
But did he use them on purpose on board ship to confuse other people?
Oh, I don't think so. Well, I certainly would never do it.
It was just the way you were talking.
You would just say it.
Mm.
Because that's what you said for a couple of years.
So was Admiralty Bay particularly strong on having its own kind of?
I think it was. Yes, yes, it probably was. It had probably. That's because of the Welsh, you see.
How do you mean?
Well, I had a lot of Welshmen there. Russ is. And there was another lad, he was at Jones, and there was another... There was Jones North and Jones South, and I found out how different, for a tiny little country, I mean...
Different accents.
Yeah, and there were different people. I mean, I think, I believe in Australia, there's the Darling Downs, it's the biggest farm in Australia. It's about the size of Wales, and it's a farm, you know. And whereas Jones North, who came from Bethesda, he ended up at Hull. He was a prophet Hull, and he was very Welsh. He spoke Welsh, and we used to get records once a year. You get a message from home, and
on the radio,
and I think the very first one. Of course, we always listened to him. His parents were talking English, and there was. Stammering, it was embarrassing, and I know what he told me because I knew him quite well. He said, "Well, next year, if he was under the two, I'm going to just tell him to talk in Welsh," and they did. He worked in the quarries in Bethesda. I didn't know her, but it's Dingwall I'm talking about. I haven't seen her for years, but. I remember there was a woman worked in boots in Dingwall, and she was very Welsh, but that's beside the point. And I just happened to, just conversation, and I said, "Where are you from?" She said, "Bethesda." You see? Oh, I said, "I had a friend from Bethesda." I said, "Neville Joe." "Neville!" You know? And I said, "Yeah." He said, "He was a conductor on the bus, you know." He said, "He never took my fare."
Just before we finish, Jim, I brought you some photographs of your time down south. Well, they're just beside you there.
Yes.
Did any of them spark any memories off for you?
I haven't finished Annie's tea yet. Well this fresh. Does, which I'd forgotten about.
This is...
That's the jetty at Signy. We better miss that cold tea. I've changed an awful lot since that picture was taken. Didn't even recognise me.
That's the John Biscoe in the background, the bright red John Biscoe. And then some black and white photographs as well.
Yeah, well, that's Alan. And I think that's...
Alan Weirden?
No, that's Alan Green.
Alan Green.
Green. And that's McDermott. He was one of the fitters. This is the bar.
In which base?
Deception.
Right.
And this is...
Well stocked, isn't it?
What?
Well stocked.
It was a good little bar. It had... Lots of ties. I think they're all about here. People used to get their ties cut off. Duke Edinburgh is there, and I think both his lady secretaries, they didn't have the ties, but and it was all destroyed, which was a pity because there was a lot of interesting things in the old bar of Deception.
What happened? Oh, it was destroyed.
It was blown up.
The
eruption.
Eruption. Yes. This is the jetty that's being built somewhere.
Yeah, and I think that's Adelaide.
And that's Peter Bird on the left.
That's Peter Bird. That's Jim Wilson there.
Yeah.
That's Alan Green.
And you're using metal reinforcing rods there?
That's right. And this is...
Vertically?
I'm forgetting the name of it. He was hit on the head with a rock.
Ken Doyle?
Ken Doyle. That's Ken. He was a nice lad. He was nice. He was very good at explosives. But, yes, he did. He blasted all this out.
Mm-hmm. So you use explosions to get...
Aye.
The ground sorted.
That's right. Because that's where the ships anchor out here. This is Marguerite Bay.
So what happened to Ken Doyle then? Did he...
Don't know where, never heard tell where he went. And that's a deception, I think.
It is indeed, yeah.
Deception. Well, that's me.
You're building a jetty there as well?
Aye. And that's Hector Duguid. He was from Aberdeenshire. Duguid. He had a... And I know this lad too, but I can't mind his name.
Let's see if I can find some names for you on that one. Jeff Hodson?
That's it. Jeff Hodson.
And Dave Walter. Dave Walter on the left.
Oh, yeah, he became... That's him. I think he became bass leader eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
And there's one more black and white one. It's a colour photograph, actually. Mm. That's... That's you.
Is it? I don't think so. That's Len Mole.
Oh, it is it? In the orange outfit, the orange.
I think that's... Well, it is. Lennon Usher Mole. Another friend of mine, and I've seen him... Last time I saw him, I was in the Goat pub opposite Kensington Hotel. Near Kensington High Street. And he worked with the Royal Geographical Society, is it?
But that's Signy, isn't it?
That's at Signy. This is the old hut.
And that's the Plastic Palace, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
What's he doing there? What are they doing?
Well, this is the foundations probably going in there, I think. Mm.
But you're not on that picture then, Jim?
No, I'm not on that picture at all. And I think that's Alan. I forget. But he sang, he had a very good voice, and he sang for Durham Cathedral Choir.
Mm-hmm. And then the last picture is Deception last year.
Deception.
Mm.
Yes.
Sad. It's a sad end, isn't it, for that bass?
Yes. Are you finished with me or not?
I think so. Just one more. In all your life, bearing in mind you're nearly 80, how big a part did the Antarctic play in your life? Was it the best time?
Well, I wouldn't say it was the best part. To tell the honest truth, I've had a very good innings, a very good time of it. Bar, I think the last few years has been the saddest.
Since your wife passed away, Liz?
Aye. Yeah. I don't know. Well, yes. I think so. Yes.
What sort of career did he have after he left the Antarctic?
I went to work for the Commonwealth Institute, going round the schools giving talks, mainly because Valerie wanted me to. Well, no, I mean, I never thought I'd ever do, but I did meet her at a thing, and she knew about this eruption. And she said to me, have you got any pictures of it? And I said, yes. She says, you should get a job with I'd never heard of the Commonwealth Institute.
Was this a long-term thing? Was it you did this for a
long time? I did it for nearly 20 years.
Did you? Oh, right.
Yeah. I didn't finish... Well, I finished when I was 60, and you finished at 60 whether you wanted to or not.
That was a government job, was it?
Well, it belongs to the Commonwealth. It was in Holland Park, in Kensington High Street.
And you were going around schools in this country? Or?
Yes. Yes, in this country. They weren't insistent, but I went to Northern Ireland, right through the worst times in the 70s, because I thought if you stop, they've won. Scotland is... London did England, Wales and Northern Ireland. Edinburgh, Rutland Square did Scotland. And I did them all from Shetland to Sark.
And what were you, just tell me what you were talking about in front of these children.
Well, it's a talk. The talk varied a bit. I did had a lot of pictures from South Georgia of the whaling because that was all gone and they'll never see it again. Asked them, the headmistress or that master, whether they wanted to. But it's a different talk. If you're talking to six-year-olds and then you're talking to the sixth form college, it's a different talk.
But was it always about the history of the place or were you covering other areas too?
I think I just blethered. and yes, I think I just I'd never done it, and then I used to get letters from Val, very very headmistry letters. Have you applied? Underlined, you see. That's what. I'll apply, fail, and that will shut her up, and that's the end of it, because I always thought, and we'll go back to Australia, you know, but things didn't work out that way because then I'd met Liz. Then my father died, and then my mother had to come out the house, and then she got ill, and of course you're getting older and older, and then you're 50, and you think, well, I'll pack this up, I wouldn't get a bloody job, no? So, and I finished it when I was 60, and I enjoyed it very much. I still do an odd talk here. I could do it on my own, but I can't. I'm not really much interested in that now. I enjoy the garden, but I don't do it full time now. As a young woman, well, she's maybe not hardly a young woman because she's got a grown family of her own now. But I know her quite. Sue, she works with me. I'll be going up tomorrow if it's fine.
So the interesting thing is, you spent 20 years blethering for a living.
Yes, yeah, a bit like a politician.
Yeah, you're a great bletherer, Jim.
What?
You're a great bletherer.
I was good at it. When I've got a job, because I was in London, and they said, well, no, you have to apply in Edinburgh. So eventually, obviously, anyway, got a long story. I went down to Edinburgh and I saw who. I got to know him in the end. Charles Carroll, he was a head man. Anyway, I got the job, which I didn't expect. But I remember saying to him, because I'd never done it before, I said, well, you better send me as near home, this home, as I can get, because I said, by about the Wednesday of the first week, I'll know whether I can do it or not. And I had a friend who was from my part of the world, from the borders, who'd got a job with the Nature Conservancy and lived in the Black Isle. And I stopped by Andrew, he lives in Skye now, and my first school was Alness, I think, or Invergordon. And I suddenly, after a couple of nights, I thought, I can't do this. And I was very fond of children. I didn't know I was, but I did know in the end. I liked the bairns. I still miss the bairns. When I packed it up, I thought that's what I missed the worst, the more. I missed the kids, and I enjoyed the bairns, and I thought, and I can do it, and I can do it pretty well. And the money was good, because by then I was more interested in the money. The money was very good. You know, I mean, well, I don't mind telling you. I mean, I was getting... Because of getting, when I packed up, I was getting £500 a week, sort of like 20 years ago, which is good, which was good money. I mean, I was on about £5,000 a bloody, about nearly two grand a month. And was that your wife?
That's all right.
And I enjoyed it. I didn't like the hotel life. I didn't mind it for the first couple of weeks, but I didn't enjoy the hotel life. But I thought, well, you can't have it always. I enjoyed the travel. I enjoyed the couple of people I met. You met a lot of interesting people. I enjoyed the conversations. I liked the bairns.
Were you in any way recruiting for the Antarctic, do you think?
Not to my knowledge.
Or sowing seeds of interest?
Oh, yes, I think I've had letters yes.
People have gone?
People have gone, yes, yeah. Yes, I've found that out, yes. And I think, well, and Valerie was the same, I remember, I think, because she, well, I still see her. But a long time ago, she said, well, I'm always glad that you went and I was part of making you go. I said, well, if it hadn't been for you and your bloody letters, I would never have applied.
Always do what women tell you.
What?
Always do what women tell
yeah?
you.
Yeah, well, she was, it was her and another lady, because she was on her own then, was my mother. My dad was dead, but I always remember my mother said, that lass wants you to have that job, you know. I didn't know that, but the old lady, she knew. She knew that Valerie wanted, that lass wanted him to have that job. And it turned out all right.
Let's leave it there, Jim. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.